Relevance X, Part 1, Lost.
2 Samuel, chapter 4, verse 4. Saul's son Jonathan had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled, and in her haste to flee, it happened that he fell and became lame. His name was Mephibosheth.
So after 9 months of pregnancy, the day had finally come. Stacy was ready to give birth to our new baby. And I didn't want to miss a thing, so I tweeted the entire event. When I was preparing for this and I told her, I want to share our tweets, you think that's okay? And she said, well, you kind of already shared them with the whole entire world, so a few hundred people doesn't matter. So the point of the story is this. For the young adults of United Methodist Church, be careful who you marry. You never know who might share embarrassing stories in Las Vegas, Nevada about you. So on 5:42 a.m., baby update number one. Just got checked into the hospital. Now it begins. And then we had this moment, this long pause in this whole labor thing. We got to share our hopes and our dreams for that little baby. We got to get on board with how we hoped to love one another, to support one another, to lean on one another through this adventure that was beginning. Then, baby update number two. Everything is fine. Stacy's having steady contractions now. It's gonna be a long day. At about this time, Stacy looks at me and she says, I'm hungry and I want sushi. Sushi for the pregnant lady in labor. Now, I saw her eyes. There was nothing that was gonna satisfy besides sushi. So, luckily I had my iPhone, I checked out the next sushi place, I arrived there as quickly as possible, I got the sushi, and then I headed out, and it all went downhill from there. I took a right because I thought I could get to the highway quicker. Then I took another left, then a right, then a left. 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. No reception on this thing, of course. I was lost. There were these images in my mind of, I'm going to miss the birth of this baby. I'm not going to be able to support my wife through this moment. Fears, anxieties, frustration grabbed me. We'll come back to my story. The story of 2 Samuel, this history book at the heart of our Bible. It tells the story of how David went from a shepherd to the king of all of Israel. It's filled with everything. Warfare, in fact, civil war is at the heart of this book. Adultery, pain, anger, heartbreaking family relationships that divide and crush. In that great story, there's a Minority Report. Another story going on beneath the surface. The story of a little boy named Mephibosheth. This Minority Report has something to speak to us. There's only 4 passages about Mephibosheth in 2 Samuel. Tonight, we start with the lost one. Tomorrow, we go to the located. And finally, on Sunday morning, we get to the leading. So this little boy, Mephibosheth, there's a civil war going on. And in ancient Israel, when warfare happened, what had to happen was that the kingdom belonged to David, but David's mighty men had to wipe out all of Saul's mighty men. So there was literally a bloodbath. And how this went in the ancient culture was that everyone had to be killed so that there was no hope of a king claiming rights to the throne. But we have this little boy named Mephibosheth. He's a son of Jonathan. His grandpa is the king of Israel at this time. But when the civil war happens, Mephibosheth is dropped on the ground. His legs permanently crippled. His name in Hebrew, Mephibosheth, means the shamed one, the shameful one. Because not only does Mephibosheth get dropped as a baby, but Mephibosheth loses his home in Jerusalem. He has to live in a place called Lodabar, right outside of Jerusalem. He loses his grandpa and his grandfather. He loses his cousins, aunts, and uncles. Here is this little five-year-old boy in Lodabar being raised by the servant Ziba. He lives in exile. Mephibosheth is lost. He's lost. But his story, like your story, is not over. Sometimes to hear lostness, we have to put our ears to each other, put our ears to the person next to us, put our ears to our family, our ears wide open to the pain and suffering and exile of the world we live in. And so, I want to invite you to some friends that have inspired me. And I want to tell you their story of lostness. Katie Flansburg has a lot to teach us this weekend. Her dad drove the car up. She tilted her head, grabbed her bag, and gently shut the door. Dad rolled up the window and said, "I'll see you at 9 o'clock. She walked down the familiar hallway, down the stairs. Music was playing in the stairs. She was greeted with love and laughter and hugs. She had been a part of this church since she was a kid. It's what her family did week in and week out, being a part of the life of the church. After all the youth had come, they gathered around these couches, an eclectic mixture of every couch color and variety imaginable." Why are you laughing? You know this strange phenomenon I talk of. They sit down around the couches and they begin to do what they call a check-in time. Every person getting a chance to sort of check in with where their life is and how's it going. And Katie notices her head starts to throb just a little bit. And she says to herself, "Not now." But the throb continued, all eyes focused on her. And as she went to share, it was her turn to check in, and she let it all out. She shared her doubts. She shared her fears. She shared what was on her mind. The youth leader interrupted her. And as the youth leader interrupted her, he said this, "That doesn't make sense, Katie. You can't believe in those things and be a part of a church." Katie was speechless. She couldn't say another word. But inside, she thought a lot of words. Like, "I'm depressed, I'm angry, I cut myself, and I don't want to ever come back here again, because it's not safe." Katie was lost. Hassan Latif has a lot to teach us about what it means to be lost. Hassan pulled his car up. He shut the car door gently, smoothly. With swagger, he walked into the familiar store, the ding behind him. Everything was commonplace. The white floors, the donuts, the coffee, the Slurpees and the Big Gulps. The aroma in the air of slightly burnt hot dogs on hot rollers. Y'all are feeling me with this one. As he went up to the counter, he bought a pack of gum, asked for the keys to the bathroom, and that's when he saw the police officer. He locked his big eyes on that police officer and slowly, slowly walked into that bathroom. And in that dirty 7-Eleven bathroom, he got out his pipe. He smoked his dope. He put the gun on the countertop because he knew at any second that cop was going to bust in there and he was going to end it. He was tired of what life had given him. There he sat, and he told me this. "Looking back, I thought that I wasn't afraid of anything, but I was afraid of everything." The cop didn't come into the bathroom that day, but later that week he was arrested He was convicted and he was sent to prison. He was in prison for 20 years. Hassan told me, they may have had the wrong case, but they had the right man. My friend Jason Stutzman and his family have a lot to teach us about lostness, about exile. Jason, on an overcast Colorado day, throws his fishing reel into the water. His line snags and it snaps. Anger grabs him. So he throws down his fishing rod and he screams out loud, uncontrollably, "Why are you doing this to me, God? It's not right. It's not fair." See, because at home, his best friend Brian was dying of leukemia. Brian and Sharon had come to live with Rachel and Jason because they didn't want to die alone. They wanted to die with friends. And at age 29, Brian died in Jason's bed. But at the same time this was happening, Rachel gave birth to their daughter, Natalie. But Natalie was born a month and a half early, a preemie baby. Natalie didn't have the suction in her mouth, so they fed her with a tube. Natalie's lungs weren't fully developed, so they hooked her on a respirator. One of Natalie's right arm has two fingers and is shortened, and the other hand has four fingers. But that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was that for 63 days in a row, Jason and Rachel drove to the hospital and back home, back and forth, longing to bring their little daughter home. They were lost. Lostness is a place. We use a lot of words for it, but you can see it in the eyes of people. Lostness is that bottomless pit, those questions that assault our mind, that hopelessness, that clenched fist reality, that reality that we really don't have the control that we wish we had, those inadequacies and insecurities that rage in this crazy experience of journey we call life. So we breathe in and we breathe out, recognizing that lostness is not the end of our story. On 1:56 p.m., thankfully, a nice lady jogging by helped me find my way to that highway. So I made it back to the hospital. And at 1:56, major contractions now. Wow. She's enduring the pain heroically. And for the moms among us, 7 centimeters dilated and 100% effaced. This is where the action speeds up. 3:29 p.m., Stacy just endured the middle finger contraction. Wow. Wow. 4:49 p.m., tenacious, unrelenting pain, raw determination and passion, go Stacy, for the women among us. Stacy invents the new Lamaze breathing technique called the hee-hee horse. 5 p.m., a moment of calm before the final push, extraordinary energy, excruciating pain, or so we thought. A nurse came in the room and checked Stacy, and Stacy had only moved 1 centimeter, which meant we had a whole bunch more labor to go. I looked in Stacy's eyes, and she had those eyes that said 1,000 words of lostness. I didn't need to talk to her. She said, "I can't do this anymore. I don't think I can make it. I've already been here over 14 hours. How is this possible?" Stacy, at that moment in her life, was lost, not sure where hope was going to come from. 2,000 years ago, on a cross, Jesus said, one of the most provocative and courageous questions you can ask in the heart and in the pit of lostness. "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which of course is Aramaic for, "My God, Why have you forsaken me? In the pit of despair, in the heart of lostness, Jesus teaches us that it's okay to give gut questions, to ask why this happened. So tonight, as we kick this thing off, there's some questions we have. What's your story? When have you felt lost? What potholes and pits have you encountered? When have you experienced hopelessness? What questions keep you up at night? When is the last time your fists were clenched? Wondering when the pain would stop. Wondering when the way would be made clear. The good news tonight is that your story is not over. Hassan's story is not over. Katie's story is not over. Jason, Natalie, and Kate Stutzman's story is not over. Because we have a God who on the third day on that cross rose from the grave. A rabbi who infuses us with new energy, with new life, with a hope for a new world. We have a God who brings us out of lostness and locates us. God has not forgotten you.